Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of War Stories. I'm Tom.
And I'm Chuck.
And we have had a heck of a week. We've got our video up on YouTube of you and Matt with Duck Boy having the Aussie snacks. So
yeah,
for those of you who were wondering, where can you hear that? It's a video, so you can go watch Chuck and Matt eat these Aussie snacks and then have a chat with Duck Boy on YouTube. And then we might eventually release the audio through the podcast feed, but for now you can just go put it up on YouTube.
Yep.
Other basically than that,
basically two guys, one microphone, one Australian.
Phrasing.
No, it was good. No, it was good. We got to try some cool snacks. I got to eat some alligators and kangaroo. Crocodile, because they don't have alligators down there. It's crocodile. Yeah,
crocodile.
They're like the
That's
more
why sophisticated it's Crocodile Florida. Dundee.
Right. And no one brought up that reference the whole time.
Oh, that's
I brought up two though. I brought up the shrimp on the Barbie, and I was probably a complete asshole when I did it, but no matter.
But that's not why we're here. We're here to talk to Jake and Cameron. They're with us. How are you guys?
Good. How are you guys?
Oh, good. Now, you guys are both in public safety, but you guys came on the show together because even though you're both in public safety, you work for different agencies, different jobs, but you served in the Navy together and then subsequently remained in close contact and are now both in public safety after, you know, serving your time in the Navy. Is that about right?
Yeah. Yep. Sums it up for sure.
Well, let's start with you, Jake. Why don't you give us a little bit about your background, how you ended up in the Navy and what you're doing now?
Yeah. So I moved around a lot when I was a kid. I went to high school in Wisconsin, graduated college in 2012, studied leadership, minored in business administration, and then spent about a year getting ready for the Navy. Joined, I want to say 2014, got out at 2017.
So that's not too long ago.
It was relatively like 4 years ago. So this is a good time. I stationed Whidbey Island, NAS Whidbey Island over there in Puget Sound, Northwest Washington, where I was an MA, Master at Arms, so kind of equivalent version of, you know, security forces for Air Force, or, you know, basically the base police.
Right.
And then met up with Cameron there over at good old Whidbey.
So you guys were both not too far from where I am now in Northern Idaho. You guys were about 4 or 5 hours west, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. Yeah.
Puget Sound, Seattle, that whole area. Is that about
right?
Yeah,
I want to say hour and a half north of Seattle. So
okay.
Kind of by the San Juan Island.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you're getting up Canadian border, Vancouver Island, like
some of
that stuff.
It's cool. Beautiful up there if you've never been.
Oh, yeah. Well, Vancouver Island is like a rainforest. They call it a rainforest because of the amount of rainfall it gets, but it's like a pine tree rainforest. It's crazy. So if you've ever watched that show Alone, they've been on there. So you were at Naval Air Station in Puget Sound, and you and Cameron served both. Now, let me back this up.
MA is your version of security forces, which is the military police. What happened to Shore Patrol? I'm confused.
I don't even know. That's a good question, Cameron. I got nothing for you there. Yeah,
I don't know. Did they just change the name one day? They were like, nah, Shore Patrol's done.
Is it the same thing if is you're it, going right. to deploy? If you go into, like, let's say you're in a port in some different part of the world, wouldn't you then have Shore Patrol on the shore surrounding the boat to go swoop up your sailors and drunk Marines or whatever? Or would it still be Master at Arms?
It'd still be Master at Arms. Yeah, I think they changed it kind of after, I don't know if it's 9/11 or what, but they just went to more of an MP type just for it's an actual job now instead of just some. Yeah, so just using other sailors to fill that role. So
prior to that, it was just, hey, you're the fucking hall monitor. Here's your armband.
Yeah, nice. Here, good. Yeah, go out in your fucking Dixie cup and enforce the law.
I mean, nobody's going to listen to you, but it'd be good.
Stop or I'll throw my keys at you.
Yeah. It sounds more, I guess, masculine, more tough now.
Master at Arms, yeah, fucking allegedly. He-Man and shit.
I almost became a Master at Arms before I went into the Marine Corps, and then I was like, nah,
good choice.
I'll go to the Marine Corps.
Yeah. He couldn't get away from the flavor of crayons.
Gonna say the crayons taste better. You like cherry the best?
Purple, it's right? Red.
Right? Oh. Yeah, it's red flavor.
It's red.
It's red.
No, I've said it before, but I was looking up couples costumes, and somebody had tagged us, and it was the man was dressed up as a Marine, and the girl was dressed up as a red crayon. And he had red lipstick and shit all over his mouth. And stuff. It was amazing. Anyway, so you were at Master at Arms, and now if you can tell us kind of what you do, you don't have to name your department if you don't want to or anything, but you got out of the Navy now, and you do what?
Yeah, so I work with the government for a land management agency, and pretty much do the federal side of what Cameron does.
Okay, and that takes us to Cameron. How did you end up in the Navy, and what are you doing now?
Yeah, I guess I grew up in a family long history of military service. So it's kind of just something I always wanted to do growing up, and long history of Navy in the family. My dad was only done one to join the Army. The rest of us were Navy. So my,
that's gotta be amazing when you guys all get together and that whole family gets together. Your poor dad just probably gets fucked on so hard.
Well, when you got an IQ that low to join the Army, it's pretty easy. So, and I got a twin brother, and we both joined together in the Navy. So, we went to boot camp together as twins and then got stationed together. He's got a different job completely, but we got stationed together.
I have to ask, you mean identical or fraternal?
Oh man, I wish we're identical. We're fraternal. It would have been fun.
Okay. I was so excited. I was like, wait a minute. There's gotta be like a regulation against going through basic with your identical twin.
Oh, it's crazy. We get to boot camp, you know, you ship off the bus and they get there and they see that two names with shoes in are on there. Like, there's two of you fucking people. Like, yeah, we're gonna stick you in the same division to fuck with your instructor. We're like, all right, sounds good.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, we joined together, and he was a mech for the Jets out there. But if we were identical, it'd be kind of fun to switch jobs. You're like, hey, you want to want me to go be a jet mechanic for the day? Like, with shoes and why the fuck you don't know what you're doing? I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm just used to a gun. So joined and then shipped off for training and got stationed at Old Whidbey Island and kind of started doing that stuff. And worked out well. I always wanted to be I'm a game warden now for Montana out here. So, and that's kind of always what I wanted to do, and kind of worked out where Jake and I kind of started that program in the Navy too. So, and here we are.
So now I have to ask, because I know you both work in wildlife law enforcement, how realistic is that show? What is it like, Wildlife Cops or something like that? It's like
the game wardens.
I've come in when my mother was living with us, and she'd be watching this show, and it was like cops on ATVs checking tags and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. Is that just like, you know, yeah, that's about right? Or
I think it depends on the show. Like, you know, some of them, like, they kind of think stage it to where they want to do a lot more like cop stuff, or I mean, at least for me, it's just all fishing wildlife related stuff, but we're on ATVs, snowmobiles, horseback, you name it. So
see, that's rad. Like,
cool.
Looking back on it and stuff like that, I'm like, you know, I would have seriously considered being a game warden, because the amount of shit you get to do as far as, like, you know, it's not just pushing a black and white around the city streets looking for tweakers all the time. You guys get it.
Yeah. You just run into them in the woods.
Right. I was just going to say, you're on a horse and you find their stumble on their little miniature lab out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, I heard something crazy. Maybe you guys can, I don't know if it's probably state by state, but so we have park rangers out here. We have game.
You talking about the city park rangers?
They have county park rangers. They roll in a truck and it says ranger on the side.
Yeah, that's the county park rangers.
So I've seen some of those dudes with guns. I've seen it, and apparently some of them don't have guns. And then you have the game wardens that I've run into a bunch of times in like the mountains and shit and the hills, and they have guns. But then I heard this this rumor that when they went through the academy, they had to go through all like the shooting and stuff like that, but they weren't allowed to carry a fucking piece. Like the rangers weren't allowed to carry a piece when they went out on patrol. Like they didn't have the authorization. They weren't full fledged out here, peace but officers. The game wardens were, yeah, but the game wardens were, and then other rangers were. It was super confusing to me because every time I've come in contact with them, they have pistols, they have a full Sam Brown. And someone said this and I was like, well, that's weird. And then they had a classmate who was a ranger or something like that. And I might be all fucked up, but
you are.
This is just word of mouth. But he was like, yeah, they went on a stop and they had to stop all these people under a bridge. And his partner's like, all right, go handle it. And he's like, but I don't have a gun. And he's like, I don't give a fuck. Go handle it. He's like, he quit. He just quit. He's like, no, it's not for me. But I'm like, I told him, I was like, no, it doesn't sound right, dude, because every time I've run across rangers or game wardens in their trucks, they all have firearms. Like, it's all of
so
them.
So I think if, correct me if I'm wrong, but we'll get into this the easy way by asking Jake and Cameron to just kind of go over how, because obviously we have state and federal, right? One of you guys is feds and one of you guys is state. So my understanding is, when you get down to the local level, which would be county and city, you have different classifications, right, Chuck? So you have like community service officer rangers, where they go and they make sure the park is clean and they write, you know, tickets for parking infractions or campfires or this and that and anything. Then you got the sworn rangers who are like out enforcing, you know, that, but that's at the local level. As far as the federal level, I would assume it's the same at the state level. You guys are all powers, you know, peace officers, you know, powers to arrest, completely law enforcement qualified. It's just a question of what the course and scope of your authority and jurisdiction is. And so if you could just explain to us what that course and scope is.
Yeah. So for, at least on the federal side, they have like the educational rangers, I guess so you would say. That's more like your interp for, you know, tours and stuff. That's with, you know, that version. And then kind of what I do, it's basically a federal officer in multiple counties of multiple states. I have, you know, our region covers three states, and I'm in, you know, one county almost every day, a different county every day. From different states, and we go on different details and stuff. So it's we use the MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, combination of state and federal authority. In some counties, you know, sheriff doesn't want the fed guy to you know, whatever, right, be on that side. But really, when it comes down to it, it's all about public safety, and we're in marked units, and we have long guns and like everybody else. And if I see, you know, CHP or other state patrol or local roll through, you know, I'm definitely going to stop and back them up, kind of thing. So that's kind of
the bottom line is you're a cop and you're going to help other cops.
Basically. Yep.
Yeah. Now, real quick on the federal side. So from my understanding, also back to what we were saying, that they're sworn and non-sworn, I guess what you're talking about is like the Ranger Smith Jellystone National Park Yogi Bear Ranger. Yeah. Who's trying to, who's trying to stop the picnic baskets from getting stolen.
Yep.
But then you're also talking about like a no shit Teddy Roosevelt National Park system fucking
type
like,
thing.
Right. Where you're actually out crushing crime and suppressing evil. You're just doing it amongst the trees and bears.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Yep. And, I guess the term would be federal wildlife officer version of it. And then there's, you know, Park Service has their rangers and then the BLM has their rangers. So it's, you know, that the whole land management based area system works pretty well. It's on the federal side though. So every agency has their up and downs, right? So
Right.
For the federal government.
Yeah, working for the feds, you could go anywhere, but working for the feds, they can send you anywhere. So,
national asset. Yeah, that's a good and bad thing. You get that and, travel, but then you have to go do fun, not fun stuff.
Yeah, God forbid you get sent to the federal wildlife office in Death Valley.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
The word death is in the name.
Death,
okay. Yeah. So now. Cameron, you're on the state side. And you're in Big Sky country up there where there's more cows than people.
Yep, so exactly.
Wildlife management up in Montana, I would guess, is quite the broad spectrum of duties.
Yeah, and it just varies. You know, like I started my career out in kind of central Montana and then was sent out to eastern Montana, and then now I'm up in northwest Montana. So, I mean, each place you go is just varied on your duties. Like up here, I'm dealing with a lot of grizzly bear issues and black bear and lions and all that stuff on a daily basis, where eastern Montana, you just see a cow and a fence and maybe an occasional antelope. So, and maybe a person. So
really, so eastern Montana has a big, like the animal demographic and stuff difference is very different in the eastern side of the state than the western side of the state. I mean, I know western Montana butts up again. It's the part of Montana that's sniffing Idaho, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It looks like the face of Joe Biden sniffing the state of Idaho.
Well, we don't want to claim that one. We don't.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But
that's all mountains and stuff like that, but you're saying eastern Montana is all like plains? Yeah. And
yeah, it just kind of varies. Montana's unique where you got, like where I was, you had a bunch of badlands and big rolling hills and coulees and breaks and stuff like that. And where like up here, you got big jetting mountains and wilderness. So yeah, it just varies a lot of what you're dealing with. So, but yeah, a lot more mule deer and antelope and stuff out there. And now up here is a lot more elk and whitetail. So, and a lot of grizzly bears. So yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, so now you guys ended up not joining the Navy together. You ended up joining Cameron with your twin brother who was, he was not at Whidbey Island, I'm assuming.
He was at Whidbey Island. Oh. Yeah, he got stationed there. Yeah.
Wow, you guys just can't get away from each other.
No.
But you and Jake want to talk about your time together in the service. Is that about right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the floor is yours, gentlemen. What's your story?
Well, yeah. So I'll kind of give you a background on NAS Whidbey Island to kind of give you an idea. So the whole base was made in 1942. Essentially for seaplanes, like seaplane patrol. They have, it's an air base. So they have P3s, growlers and prowlers and, you know, those kind of planes. There's about approximately a little over 8,000 military personnel with 18,500 roughly family members, over 10,000, you know, retirees, 500 plus reservists, over 2,000 civilian contractors
just right? On so, Whidbey Island.
Yep. The NES Whidbey Island there. Yep. But
wow.
It's a combination of air station personnel and people that fly the planes and then all the base stuff with, you know, the Canadian forces coming over doing some training there, and then, you know, 40 foreign nationals also helping out. And this is all open source, so I'm not really giving anything away. But Whidbey Island is about, it has about 83,000 people roughly. And the closest Oak Harbor, the closest city there is 23,000 people roughly in that general area. And that's the nearest city, within that island there.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking at the map right now and it's just,
it's a long island.
Yeah. It's pretty, it looks, the island looks longer than San Francisco. Anyway,
it's got a bridge that kind of matches it. A lot of suicides coming off of that bridge there. Deception's Pass, but so yeah, we did. Let's see, this naval security, right? So the MAs, so they're in charge of running the gates. You get your qualifications. You can be the armorer. You know, you got the, just like any other small agency, police. You know, there was shift work. The active duties guys went on 12s, but usually when you get into something, it'll turn into 13, 14 hour days. Then you have your DOD contractor civilians who also help out. It was unique because there was a lot of the active duty guys were able to patrol. So like nowadays, to my understanding, I don't know, Cameron, you can probably comment if I'm wrong, but nowadays, most of the active duties guys don't really patrol and do and go to calls like, you know, domestics and, you know, arsons and suicides and, you know, assaults, all that. So we had base housing. And so how it's divided up is on the northern side of the island is the main base for like operations. And then on the center side, like the center of the island is kind of the base housing next to Oak Harbor. And then there was also that seaplane base. And then the southern island was the outfield. So it kind of spread out.
So you weren't, all your assets were not in one place. You were kind of spread all over the island and had to go, correct. You know, there, it's distances that have to be covered with roads and shit can happen. Okay.
Yeah. And so for the main one, the main op space is gated and it's treated like, you know, a normal military installation, but like the base housing and the seaplane was a little bit more lax because it was created, you know, before 9/11, obviously. Right. So they had to put all these, you know, fences and security measures up later. So that kind of gives you like a rough estimate of the geology, I guess, or the locations of the patrol. So yeah, I guess, do you have anything to add there, Cameron, as far as kind of setting it up?
As far as the Navy goes, I mean, yeah, you know, you typical, you know, they promise you, you're going to be a kicking indoors and a badass, right? And you get to the base and you just were there with a ID and a scanner. You're like, beep. And you're like, wow, man, I'm just fucking killing it out here. So, but there's a wide varied stuff you can do from FTO, field training officer, to armor, K9, all sorts of stuff, but you just have to be qualified to do that. So, and on top of that, Whidbey was very unique when we get to the fish and game stuff is that we had a lot of hunting and fishing opportunities on the base itself, which was pretty cool. So pheasant hunting, deer hunting, clam and crab and all that stuff that actually occurred on base. So
for people that were assigned to the base, or were there like public areas and people could access them and you had to worry about civilians and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, the only thing civilians could do was pheasant hunt. We had, I think, 3 pheasant release sites that civilians could hunt on. So, but the rest were, you had waterfowl management areas that those were kind of restricted to military personnel only.
But still, it sounds like, you know, with what you had a population of, you know, what, 25,000 just for NAS Whidbey? I was just doing quick math while you were spitting stuff out. But I mean, my city was, you know, 35,000, you know, population. I mean, I was assigned to a state task force, so we went all over the state, but our city, you know, itself only was about 35,000. So you guys are the size of a very small city. You know, Pismo Beach, the city of Pismo Beach only is 15,000 people during the, you know, winter, and then, you know, 40,000 people during the summer.
Yeah, it was a big base, a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people on it. So,
and then you get like the dependents that get escorted on, you know, or the civilians that get escorted on by either active duty or dependents. So
yeah, or retired, a lot of retirees too on the island still that live there that can come on and recreate. So yeah, you include that as well, and you got quite a big populace.
Yeah, so you guys are dealing with a decent cross section of, you know, people, even though they're all connected to the military. You know, they're anybody who's lived in a military town can tell you that having the town connected to the military does not mean people are better behaved.
No, not at all. Probably quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's they say that the town of Lompoc is built based on the fact that the federal prison is there and that Vandenberg Air Force Base is there. And I'm like, well, the demographic of people living there because of one reason or the other is not that much different.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's funny.
We're here for the prison. Well, we're here because my so-and-so lives on the base. There's not much difference between the two.
Yeah.
Oh, you're both guests of the federal system.
Oh, that's the truth.
Yeah. So go ahead. You guys set it up. You guys are patrolling a decent amount of area. And at the time, you guys were actually doing like police work functions, patrols, domestic.
Emergency response.
Okay.
Medical. You know,
got it.
Suicide. Assault. You know, Johnny got home from deployment, you know, figured out that Rachel was cheating on you, kind of thing.
Oh,
you know, all that stuff. So this housing is, you know, not the funnest.
Yeah, I think there's a misconception. You know, I think people looking out, maybe civilians look at military as like it's just this pristine, prestigious thing, and really it's not. There's a lot of bad shit that happens on military installations behind closed doors, essentially, that nobody ever hears about or sees. So
a lot of it gets locked down. Like the skipper don't want nothing coming out, you know, bad about their base. So
that's where, you know, the ability to kind of police your own, like even on a ship, right? You have two different kinds of discipline, and one of the kinds of discipline just stays on the ship. Like that's it. It's, you know, captain's mast or whatever. It's like on ship discipline, and it goes no further than that. Is that my understanding? So the Navy's like got a lot of autonomous stuff like that already in place.
Yeah, for sure. I was never on a ship, so I wouldn't know, but I don't think Cameron, I can speak for you. You haven't been on one either.
I stepped foot. That's about it. So
Well,
about that life.
Yeah. You're like, I'm joining the Navy and I'm not going on the ship.
Yep.
Plans differ. So yeah, in order to explain this, the main story, I kind of got a precursor it with a mini little story, if that would work for you guys.
Yeah.
So in the time, I want to say 2015, 2016, we were working nights. It was, I want to say November-ish. So I don't know if you know anything about the Puget Sound as far as the weather goes, but when it's raining sideways, that's instead of snowing, you know, that's the kind of cold weather it would rather have in that area. But I was working 13 Alpha. So that was like a detailed, since I had just gotten back from shifting and issuing firearms to the DOD guys. So I was working on the cage as the armorer. And I was coming back over to the 13 side. So the 13 side is the base housing area. And as I was driving back over, I get a call, you know, hey, local assist on base, you know, in base housing. He's got some, he did a traffic stop, basically. I guess his original call, the local PD, I want to say Oak Harbor PD. They solid guy, Sarge. He's a killer. He calls me up on the phone as I'm responding over through our dispatch, and he's like, hey, Jake, you're gonna want to come and check this out. So on the way he talks to me, and he's like, so came out as a suspicious vehicle. So at the time we were having an arsonist, right? So an arsonist was kind of lighting up random base houses.
Really? So
it got called in as a suspicious vehicle, right? So see something, say something. And so I get there, and he had like four people out, one male, three females. He goes and he gives me all of their licenses. He's like, check this out, run them all. So I ran them all and verified his come up with, and it was, everybody was suspended. I'm like, well, check that off the list. Sorry, you ran the driver. Driver was DUI. All of the passengers were suspended. I'm like, what's going on? And so trying to be a nice guy. He has, you know, one of their buddies give him a call. to see if they can
round up a driver with a license.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. So this
I have been there.
this individual shows up, right? And he's, you know, meth head, whatever. And lo and behold, it was only him in his car. And guess what? He was suspended. So I'm like, Sarge, you're on a roll. Let's keep on going.
I thought you were going to tell me he had a warrant. I had that happen. The driver shows up. They had a warrant.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no. But it was funny. So at the end of the night, that night, right? So two cars, both towed. Both of the male drivers walked into town. Two of the female got a courtesy ride to their location, since they're not from the area. They're not a part of base housing. They're civilians. Everybody's a civilian, by the way.
Right.
Not affiliated. But this driver, she was, I mean, let me tell you something about Miss Shantice. She was five foot nothing.
Okay.
I want to say a minimum of 350 pounds, man. She was a big girl. And
so she's 5 foot tall and 5 feet wide.
Yeah, basically. And so
a cube.
But she also had like that personality of, you know, that crazy aunt that whenever she's just loud and boisterous, you know, and she's yay high. So she was drunk. She was wasted. So she got, you know, took him to the drunk tank from local, and we got her information and all that and cited her for trespass, etc. So fast forward 2 weeks, right? 2 weeks later, we're on nights again. It was right after a real rainy night. And it was about 2 o'clock in the morning, super foggy, real thick. And at nighttime, I don't know, I can only assume anybody who's been on nights gets real bored real fast. There's a couple of gate guards that were, you know, either playing on their phones or I think they were talking to one of the other patrol units that was kind of like showing them a video or something. I don't remember. But anyway, they were screwing off. And this is at the main gate in Langley at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm coming from Altfield, which is quite a drive. And I'm probably about 2 minutes away from the front gate, right? I hear a very frantic voice over the radio saying, gate runner, gate runner, gate runner.
Oh, no.
Langley Gate, we have a gate runner.
And that could be anything, right?
Anything, yep, yeah. So it's anybody that has illegally gone on base and breached the base security walls, right?
Yeah.
So when they say Langley Gate, that's like their main gate. So they've got through past two security and possibly whoever else was in the area, you know. So it turns out, as they're going there, I turn on the main road to go. So I'm real close. So I see part of this happen. So basically what had happened was.
There it is. What happened was.
Yeah. The driver illegally got on base, blacked out their lights, went in the outbound gate. By the time the gate guards realized that they have breached it illegally, they popped the bollards too late. So they have a easy switch that pops and it'll screw up any vehicle that ever, you know, tries to hit it or run it over. It'll lift up tons of cars and
yeah, it's those like hydraulic pylons and stuff. Yeah.
Bigger bollards is what they call them, and so they ended up popping those emergency ones, and I'm screaming down the front, you know, road trying to get to the gate, honking at the guy to
please tell me you're driving bollards. A Crown Vic.
it was actually unfortunately it was the newer crappy Impalas. Not as good. Okay. At all.
Go ahead.
But yeah, so I'm screeching, and it takes a while for the emergency bollards to drop down, and by this time, by the time I get through the serpentine and past the gate, the gate guard's shack, there's a second unit that's already on a hot stop on this vehicle that had already breached the gate. So I want to say he was closer than I was. So I want to, you know, he was probably on site. And that's why I think that they were watching videos, allegedly. But they were doing a hot stop. So I get there finally. I draw down, right? But I also see I take a breath. I see time slow down, and I see the driver of the gate runner on top of the vehicle, on the roof of the car. And wouldn't you know it, it's Miss O'Shantice. So I reached her. Check this out. Right? So she
and she's naked.
She's topless, man.
Right. She had, I knew it. I fucking knew it.
She had girls in her hands. She had her girls in her hands dancing on top of her Beyonce's car? Single ladies, man. Yeah, on the top of the car, crushing it. As she's dancing, she's crushing the top of the car. She's like, I'm Michelle Obama, bitch. I'm Michelle Obama. While that's going on, I'm like, Shanties, what are you doing? So we go and we grab her ankles. I mean, two hands, right? So you've seen some large people, you know, she may have a medical condition. I don't know.
Cankles.
It was like cake. It was like cake. Like my fingers squeezed in. I didn't glove up, unfortunately. My fingers.
No time. Yeah. No time.
Ankles. Yeah. Love. So when we pulled her off, man, she crunched. Like, I swear there was an earthquake and there had to have been a crack on the pavement floor there.
So, I wanted to give the audience an idea. When you're a cop and you have to grab onto a particularly fleshy person, there's like three different kinds. There's like the rubbery kind where it's just like, you know, then there's the hard kind where you're like, holy shit, you may be fat, but you're like about to pop. It's just it's hard. And then there's what Jake's talking about, which is like soft fruit where you grab a heavy set person, grab a fatty, and your fingers sink. But
so bad.
The rest of the flesh goes in between them. And then when you remove your hand, the print is still depressed into their Play-Doh. Flesh.
Yeah.
Right. Like Play-Doh. That's what when he said a birthday cake, I knew exactly what he was talking about, because you grab it and those fingers embed, and then you remove your hands and those finger marks are still there.
Were you sweaty?
100%. Oh, I don't even remember. I just remember my fingers sinking in, man. And I was grabbing at the ankle.
Right. And her ankle was probably the size of like my neck.
I'd probably say bigger, man. Like, it was legit, like two-handed. I couldn't touch
it. Right. Yeah.
So, oh. I don't know. But she crashes down. She I'm pretty sure she cracked the pavement. I wouldn't doubt it.
Oof.
Anyways, so yeah, then, you know, hook and book and whatever. We don't have a brig or a jail in ours, so what we do have is secure interview room, right? So since I was the second on scene, I didn't take that report, but I got to do the fun stuff.
Right.
And then
being so second on scene is always the best.
It's the best, yeah. And so what ended up happening, I guess she got transferred there and standing by for either local or I don't know. I had to go to a different call right after that because I was, you know, and
still working, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I don't know, Cameron. You know, kind of. I heard about it. I mean,
yeah. So then I'm just coming in, I think, to relieve the next section, and I see that big old gal sitting in the back. I'm like, well, what's her fucking deal? Like, oh, she gate runner and all this stuff. Heard the story, and so the guy was watching her comes back, and he's kind of just ghost faced and like, what the fuck happened? And he's like, well, we're gonna release her, and she ended up shoving the release form up her fucking snatch and said, you're not getting it back. Actually shoved the paper up her fucking cooch and said, you're not getting it back.
Hey, ma'am, we don't want it back.
That's... Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you ever want to. That stuff a nightmare.
Did she take her clothes off to do that?
No, yeah. You got to poke out your mind's eye.
I think she just shoved it up. I think she just pulled it out and shoved it up. So
you know, dude, you know she was wearing stretch pants. She could have, wearing stretch pants. She didn't need to take off her pants. She just pulled them another 3 feet away from her body.
Oh, it's like a string on freshly baked dough just sitting over that horizon, just pouring over the sides. So,
probably looked like a can of fucking Pillsbury biscuits that you left on the counter for a little too long.
just popped out of the can. But yeah, shoved that thing up her cooch, said, you're not getting it back.
What about paper cuts, man? Like, that's got to hurt. Fuck.
Oh, you would imagine it would.
Hopefully she wadded it up first, because if she's you know, if it was like, cause then there's like the question, did you just, you know, make it like a ghost and put your fingers up the middle? Did you crumple it up into a ball? Did you roll it into a tube first? Like,
where is your mind at?
What are we thinking? What are the considerations? Okay, I'm going to stuff this piece of paper, this release form up my hoo-hoo. What's the best way to do that? And I don't think that was a long conversation. I think it was really like instinctual.
Just pure emotional. Yeah.
This was like, not the first time she's done this.
No, this, there's probably been some other shit up there. Right.
Probably disintegrated or still up there.
Ew.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The old prison wallet. So.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Did you guys, now I've come across this a couple times as well when I was active duty in the Marine Corps and when I was a sworn law enforcement officer. We ran into people on bath salts. I ran into a couple military dudes, like I said, like as a sworn officer that were like reservists that, you know, were on bath salts and they were absolutely out of their fucking mind. But then I've also seen it where when I was active duty, where we had some dudes who just went off the deep end and took bath salts and went fucking cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and they ended up going to the brig and whatever. And, have you ever had to deal with any of that working as like military police on your base?
Yeah, we had a couple. Most of them were heroin and meth. So I think Greg Ham, we had marijuana, but
yeah, I've run into like black tar heroin, some cocaine stuff. One guy that tried to inject, I think heroin up his arm, but missed the vein. He had jungle rot all down his arm and shit. So he was down saying he was trying to catch eels down in the ocean. He's just like baked off his mind and just
you underestimate the ability of family members and veterans themselves to use copious amounts of recreational pharmaceuticals.
Well, it helps you focus.
My time in the military, we had some crazy shit. One of our sergeants who was just, I don't know how the fuck he made it, but he ended up becoming a sergeant and then got I think I've said it before on the show. He ended up getting arrested out in his trailer out in town for a fucking meth lab. Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, and then every time I'd be on duty, that dumbass would call from the brig.
God damn. Still, so I'm curious. So what did you guys do with young Shantice? So you've got this girl. None of you wants to go get the paperwork back. You're going to kick her loose anyway.
I think that we ended up filling out another release form and just getting her out of there before she shoved it again up her fucking hooch. So, yeah.
I don't know cognizance, right?
Yeah. I don't think
so. You cited her for the violation, or did you just kick her? Like, don't ever fucking run the gate again, you drunk crazy person, and then kick her loose. Like, was there charges? Did she get a tail because of that?
I'm sure she did. She did, and then just released for a court date, which I'm sure she never came to. So,
right, we used to call certain people when you give them a ticket, you know, cite and release them, and we'd say, "Here's your warrant application, sign."
Basically, we know they're not here.
Sign here. It says you'll come back to court. We both know you won't, but sign it anyway.
Yeah, might as well. Yeah,
you got those two people. There's two kinds of people. Three. The average person just signs it, but there's two categories. There's the category of people that refuse to sign it because their overly privileged sense of injustice says, "I'm not signing that," and admitting guilt. And you're like, "Bitch, it just says I'm going to court. That's all. Just shut the fuck up." And sign it. Really? You don't want to be that 90-year-old woman that stands on her principles and goes to jail because she wouldn't sign the fucking stop sign ticket. Okay. So there's that group. And then there's the other group, which is like, "Here, sign this ticket promising that you'll show up in court. We both know you'll never show up in court, and this is going to go to warrant. However, that'll just give me another stat when I come to find you and arrest you a second time."
It's just crazy. I don't ever know what happened to old Chantel, so hopefully she found her way in life.
There's a couple of people that, like, I looked at back on my career and I go, you know, that was a weird call. I wonder whatever happened to that person. And you know, they're, you know, dead in a trailer park or in a, drowned in a shallow pool, their old vomit somewhere.
A lot of meth heads like are freaking cockroaches. Like they will not die.
True.
They live to be forever.
Meth like preserves your body weirdly.
Yeah.
it turns you into a wax.
I was just talking about this with my wife. We were talking about some personal stuff regarding a family member who's all doped out. And I was like, well, what happens if she overdoses on meth? You know, that would probably kind of like solve the problem, I guess. And I was like, well, here's the thing. I've never seen anyone overdose on meth. In fact, it like preserves them, like just like as we're saying, it preserves them and they end up dying from other causes. But before they go, and it's something related to the meth, but it's not directly from the actual drug itself, like an overdose or something like that. Half the other times it's like, you know, meth induced psychosis caused them to do something stupid and they get hurt that way, they go to prison or they do something crazy, or they end up dying of fucking like old age at the age of ripe of 40, but they look like they're 90.
So here, because when you die of a meth overdose, pretty much your heart explodes, attack. Right? So you have a massive heart attack and die, or you stroke out because your blood pressure gets too high, or, you know, but that's so rare. Your body can get pushed pretty freaking far with stimulants. I mean, that's why, you know, the expression, your mind will give up, you know, 10 times before your body will exist. So yeah, tweakers don't like, they use enough meth and they're just superpowered. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is if you talk to people that have researched it, chronic meth use, the scans of their brains, chronic meth users, are nearly identical to the brain scans of paranoid schizophrenics.
Well, so, that makes them break rationality.
Right. So what you end up doing is taking a drug that is transforming you into a paranoid schizophrenic. And then eventually that takes over your personality and somebody has to put you down for, you know, trying to carve open a child in the middle of the freeway at noon. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Pumping chemicals into your brain probably never is a good thing.
Yeah. And what cracks me up too with tweakers, first of all, some of the shit they'll do, and I'll say that there is one method of cooking dope that we learned in lab school that, requires the use of a very specific type of metal. It's a water reactive metal. This metal is so reactive, if you throw it in water, it will explode. Like literally catch fire and explode just by throwing it in water. Well, this metal is also not readily available under normal forms. You can't, you know, most tweakers aren't going to go into a scientific supply store and buy these reactive metals. So they find ways to extract it from everyday items, right? So one of these items requires taking a cast iron skillet and a car battery, superheating a cleaning agent, and I won't tell you which one, but superheating a cleaning product until it like melts in your frying pan, then taking the cast iron skillet outside, putting the positive on the handle and throwing the negative or vice versa into the molten frickin' mix and running current through it, which causes the metal to crystallize. And then you can like, wait a minute. Just to make one of the ingredients, I have to fucking run jumper cables through molten cleaning products in a cast iron skillet. Is that what you're telling me?
That's crazy.
And they do it too. And they fucking like you think about all these freaking booger eating rednecks that are like, you know, they're like, hey, let's put as much tannerite as we can in this deer carcass and shoot it from 10 feet away. See what happens. Right. We're not talking about sigma cum laude. You know, this wasn't your high school valedictorian. Well, maybe
I've seen some that fucking go off the rails, dude.
Yeah. They just go off. Tweakers are their own. Once you get into that world, you're your own breed of person. You're like an alien.
We had dudes come into the station. They're like, look who I got. Look who I arrested. And I'm like, who? And they show me the driver's license. And I'm like, what did she do? Like petty theft? And they're like, no, dude, like felony. I forgot what it was. And like, go look at her now. And I'm like, geez. And like, we pull up her first arrest ever. And she looks like a completely different person, damn near like identical to what it was on the ID. And it was, the ID was issued a year ago. Not from now, but a year from the incident. And I was like, wow, she's very pretty. Like, I was like, holy shit. And so I go and look in the cell and I peek my head around the corner and I look in and I'm like, what the fuck? And I come back. I'm like, wait, this cell? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, no.
Oily, fuck, greasy, no, pasty, dude, covered in scabs, yeah, missing some teeth.
Yeah, that's not her, up, dude. Like, that's a skeleton. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, how long has she been using meth? Oh, like 8 months, dude. And I was like, whoa. Completely different fucking person. Yeah.
If crack was invented by the CIA to keep the black man down, meth was invented by the CIA to keep the white man down. Or ICE specifically. Dude, like,
that's some crazy shit.
You know, it's because you're not talking about like peanut butter dope. Like the old, like when you talk about when bikers, you know, like when they call it crank and you talk about speed, that's different. Like that's a much different substance than crystal meth, than, you know, what's it's been called crystal meth. It's been called ice. It's been called glass. That is a very different drug. You're talking about the difference between popping a couple of Vicodin and taking heroin. That's really the difference between speed and crystal meth. Right. So,
yeah, it's just crazy. They're creative though. We'll give them that. I mean, they have some ingenuity to create some of this shit. So.
Oh my God. Tweakers can take anything apart. And usually at 2 o'clock in the morning, right?
It's always,
they can take anything apart. Now, do you guys have this? I'm going to ask you this because this was something, and Chuck, I'm sure, can attest to this, but I don't know if it's a regional thing. When we would bust tweakers, they always collected rocks.
Yes. Yeah.
What 100%. The fuck? If you're searching somebody's shit, here's all you young coppers out there. If you're searching somebody's shit and you find a random collection of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 30, 80 rocks, start looking for dope.
I might be able to answer 100%. That. So I've come across tweakers who collect rocks. I've come across tweakers who collect pieces of fucking like circuit boards and shit, and like broken down like CD players and just whatever electronical equipment just busted to pieces in their pockets. And then I've also come across one dude who's an electrician who is carrying like clipped pieces of fucking wire. Like, I'm talking like big motherfuckers, big pieces of wire in his socks. And I was like, dude, what the fuck? And I asked the one dude with the electrician, I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, it's for good luck. And I'm like, you have like 15 of them in your socks. Like, that can't be comfortable.
How much luck do you need, right?
I asked the other tweaker, well, I was like, why do you have all this, like this weird shit in your pockets, broken down CD players and stuff like that, which could be the same for the rocks. He's like, well, I extract the gold and platinum out of it. I'm like, what the fuck? He's like, yeah, you take it apart and you just melt it down and you can extract and you do this like chemical product. I'm like, the fuck?
Okay. So the way every stoner thinks they're like, stoners think they're philosophers, right? You get somebody stoned enough and they will explain to you how they can fix the world and create world peace, and and they can explain the self, and all the supernatural metaphysical secrets of the universe can be explained by a stoner. That's how stoners are when you get them high enough. Tweakers, however, think they're Thomas fucking Edison.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, with enough meth, you have an engineering degree and you can figure out advanced technology. And if it's
all
hilarious.
Reverse engineered, though. It's never engineered.
No, they
right, never exactly. They never.
And I'm like, where's your gold and platinum? They're like, whoa, you know, it takes some time. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you're just a fucking weirdo. Yeah.
He was the same guy in high school that left banana peels on his roof to dry out in the sun because he heard if you dried them out and smoked them, you could get high. That's the same dude. He's the same guy that was fucking sniffing formaldehyde because he heard PCP cigarettes, you know, were dipped in formaldehyde. These are the same dumb shits that, you know, God, if we could just get the drugs to work faster, you know, that's really ideal, because you're not going to get them to stop using it. So that's like people are fentanyl is terrible. Well, it kind of is just more efficient. Like, it just cuts out about 25 years worth of bullshit that law enforcement has to deal with. So maybe the secret is more fentanyl, not less.
Maybe. I don't know, like tweakers and rocks, man. Like, so I teach a big thing for my agency in my region. We archaeological stuff. So what they end up doing is selling like ARPA stuff, archaeological things like arrowheads and projectile points and, you know, native artifacts and, you know, things that are over 100 years old in the ground. And then they get the dope money, obviously, right? So that's why a lot of the tweakers sell rocks and stuff. So from my experience, if dudes have rocks, you know, or they have like, they're walking with walking poles and there's a spoon on the end that's like a flip stick, right? So they're flipping around to see if there's any like arrowheads and stuff underneath the rocks when they're walking. But like
this mainly, is like Indiana tweaker and shit, like
basically, man. Yeah, it's flip sticks, it's a real thing, like legit areas.
There's like an amateur paleontologist. Just to, what do you do? I'm an amateur paleontologist, I'm just supporting my meth habit.
Well, I remember holy this one shit. There's this one time I was going down and I was going to go check some anglers, and I looked down on the river and there's this gal in jeans and cowboy boots up to her knees, and she's wading across the river and like picking rocks. Like, what the fuck is she doing? So go down there and talk to her. And she's just combing through the river, soaked in her jeans, just said she's looking for the right agates, and look to the left, her tweaker boyfriend's over there. So I go have a chat with him, like, oh, yeah, doing any fishing? He's like, nope, just out here picking rocks. He's like, oh, you want to see him? I'm like, oh yeah, sure. And all of a sudden, he just spits out about 10 rocks out of his mouth. He's been tongue swabbing, and he's got no teeth. I'm like, nope. You have a good day, sir. I'm gonna leave now.
Wow. Yeah. Fucking tweakers, man. And tweakers, like, they'll tell you, do you want to see my pile of gold and my pile of amethysts I've collected? And you look over and it's fucking iron pyrite and geodes. And you're like, all right, you're
going somewhere.
Yeah, right on. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
You almost made it.
And they also look at you like their shit is the most obvious shit in the world. Like, duh, they think that's part of that weird, like, genius engineering degree they get when they smoke dope. They're so confident that they just are like, no duh about everything. Like, you fucking pull over a tweaker. I remember my partner was searching this one gal, and he's searching her waistband, and he sees a little like piece of tissue sticking up because she's, you know, one of them heavy set girls, but wearing the lowrider jeans. So you could see a little whale tail. Mm-hmm. And sticking up from the whale tail is a little bit of tissue. And my partner, it's, you know, it goes, what is that? Right. And he's going to go reach. And so he's gloving up as he's going to reach. She's like, it's my ass pipe. And he's like, it's your what? And she sounded like what the fuck? Like he pulls on it. Yeah. He pulls on it and pulls it out. And it was a fucking meth pipe, you know, made out of the glass vial. And it was wrapped in tissue, like, delicately, so it wouldn't get messed up, and gently placed, not up her asshole, just in between her butt cheeks.
Oh my god,
that's a normal thing, right?
And he was like, that. He's like, "This is your what? Like, it's my ass pipe." Like, duh.
Yeah. So yeah, like everybody knows.
I had a similar.
Yeah.
What are you new?
I had a similar encounter. I don't remember what the stop was, or if it was a radio call. Probably a radio call, but we ended up stopping this dude. Long story short, he's got warrants, or he's on parole, probation, search conditions. So we search him, and I'm searching this dude, you know, and I'm like, what the fuck is this in your crotch? And his pants are kind of loose. So I'm like, well, I don't really want to put my hands down there. So I'm just going to open it and kind of shake it. I open it and shake, and I'm like, oh, what the fuck? He has a fucking bubbler, like a bulbous meth pipe with the ball on the end, the glass and everything.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I look, and then I look next to it, and it's his junk. And have you ever seen a guy with a fucking yeast infection? Oh,
no,
dude, no. It was like, oh, it looked like he took his dipstick and he shoved it in cottage cheese, pulled it out, and then sweat in his underwear all day.
Oh,
I shook it, and I was like, yeah, that's going back. And I was like, finish my search. The thing fell out in the ground, and I was like, ah.
Wait,
you're good.
As weak as your gag reflex is, how did you make it? Chuck's one of those cops. He'll freely admit, like, to sending his partner into the nasty calls first, because he's like, "Nope, I can't smell it."
Oh, and that right there, I'll lose it. Cottage cheese, like that yeast. That yeast infection, cottage cheese look is just.
Can't do cottage cheese.
That'll get me every time. My eyes are watering. It's bad. Like, that shit is so gross. I didn't I don't even think I fucking arrested him. I'm like, dude, I've had shit in my hands. I've had people shit in my hand. I've searched people with caked on shit all over them, but nothing gets me like fucking yeast infection, cottage cheese infected fucking junk. Like, that's disgusting. And I'm a guy, so I only search men. So I'm like, dude, I've never seen that. Like,
I feel like I'm going to have to throw an extra
warning. I was like, this
is I'm going to go wash my hands.
Sir, you have a nice day. I'm out.
On that note, geez. Well, we do try as we come to a close. I want to appreciate, you know, say I appreciate you guys coming on and talking about your time at the Naval Air Station Whidbey Island. We'd like to have you come back on, whether it's separately or together, just to talk about the wildlife stuff, because some of that stuff is extremely fascinating to me, especially now that I'm in a much more rural area, and I know I'm going to be dealing with the wildlife wardens as I'm out learning to hunt. And
yeah, we should have like a hunter episode, like like hey, this is the do's and don'ts, don't do this but do this,
right? Exactly.
Yeah,
we can have it for me, because right? I'm gonna need that shit.
No, I'd love to come back on. It'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. But we always give our guests a chance to dedicate their episode to a fallen brother or sister, and so my understanding is you guys have somebody you'd like to dedicate your episode to.
Yeah, Petty Officer Rashad Miller. He was pretty close to both of us. He was a real good guy, and I believe he had a motorcycle crash down over in Whidbey Island there. I think he had just gotten out of the Navy. But yeah, Petty Officer Rashad Miller, he was a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good man. Yep.
Well, Petty Officer Miller, rest easy, brother. We've got it from here. Do you gentlemen have anything that you guys want to add before we close out? Because, you know, it's your episode, it's your story. We appreciate you guys coming on. Any parting thoughts?
Yeah, if you don't mind. I think, you know, this episode is relatively on the lighter side. We all deal with a lot of negative stuff. I think that something, you know, that's helped me, two things that have helped me is getting in the word. I can't do this job and not believe in God. For every bad thing, you know, every opposite of bad is good.
Yep.
I don't believe that everything happens for a reason. I believe that, you know, God will make the good things come out of the bad stuff. And in addition to, you know, praying and getting in the word, the main thing in addition to that is for me, that has helped me get through some of this stuff and quiet my mind a little bit, is I'm starting to write a lot more. So any individuals that, you know, have issues with, and you're going to say that you have issues because you're going to own up to it, basically writing has helped me quiet my mind and kind of organize my thoughts. And, you know, I got a pen and just a notebook just for random stuff that, you know, is in my head. And I'm kind of, as kind of dumb as it sounds, like I write a little bit of poetry and just whatever comes to my thoughts. And I've noticed, you know, rewriting some of the traumatic cases that I've had has helped a lot, and kind of getting the word out there as far as writing goes. Not a lot of guys do it, but I definitely challenge folks to do that. That's all I got.
And as I'll tag up on that, I can tell you 100% I agree with you on, I talked to a chief one time and he and I disagreed on a lot of things, but we both agreed on, you know, spiritual issues. And I said, I don't know how people can survive this job and not believe in a higher power, you know, and not at least believe that there's something out there. Because it's just, you know, I know what it is for me, and Jake and I, you know, I'm sure in agreement on a lot of things, but, if whatever it is for you, whether it's writing or whether it's talking to somebody or whether it's, you know, art therapy and painting or drawing or writing a song or whatever it is, the shit's got to come out somewhere, and it shouldn't come out at the end of a boot onto your wife, kids, and dog. So, nor should you direct it at yourself, because you didn't, you know, you took on this shit, but you don't have to hang on to it.
Yeah. But yeah. And I'm kind of the same with Jake, but I find, you know, I'm fortunate. My dad was career law enforcement and retired here recently, a few years. And so it's nice to have somebody to talk to. I think that's an important thing. You don't hold this stuff in, because we all see a lot of horrible stuff in this career, and talking to you guys too, it's nice to yeah, we're all similar minded, and maybe somebody outside and that's non-law enforcement looking like, how can you laugh at some of that stuff? Well, I think we find humor, and that's kind of a coping mechanism of how we deal with some of this stuff, because you see so much horrible shit in a career. So, you know, you thank all this brave men and women that do this for a career. So thank you guys for what you did, and thanks for letting us come on and talk to you.
No, appreciate it. We'll have you back. I'm sure Chuck will get you scheduled. We'll do hunting season is approaching. Yes. I'm sure we will need to get that going, sooner rather than later. I'm going to head out there with a buddy of mine from work who's really experienced at it, and, try and bag myself an elk for the season, and then take it to a butcher and have it butchered. Chuck, I'll make sure that he gets me some elk sausage, and I'll send you some.
Yeah. Yeah. Some elk steaks. Some of that backstrap would be great. Even some of the shit meat, like just like the stew meat. Dude, man, that shit is so good. Like, I had some deer stew meat.
Well, I'm going to have to buy, like, I have two refrigerators out in my garage. I need to get rid of one of the refrigerators and buy like an actual like deep freeze. Yeah. Cause, my understanding is you bag an elk, you'll have meat for the year. So
yeah, you'll have a lot. So.
Yeah. So I'll make sure and send you some. And, but, do you have any final thoughts?
Real
Chuck?
Quick. I'm going to touch on the, if you want to come on the show real quick, but
we've got a couple real quick too. We got a couple of emails. I wanted to read them on this episode, but we ran out of time. So we'll do that.
I did have
episode.
Someone who did come in and ask, and I'm going to touch on it real quick because we have two military guys right here. She was a listener, female listener. She wants to, she's like, what are my thoughts on female in the military? She's like, I have a friend who's in the, I don't remember what branch of service. But she's like, he doesn't trust female, people in the military. And I'm like, well, that's weird. She's like, what do you think? And I'm like, well, I had an all male MOS, you know, it was a combat MOS, you know, amphibious assault vehicles. We didn't have any females, and every female Marine or Army that I've worked with in a professional capacity in law enforcement, I've been able to trust 100%. And I was like, so that to me is just completely bogus. But I really do want some females listeners who listen to this shit, who maybe you're in the military, you've ever thought about coming on. I want to come on. I want you guys to come on because I want you guys to talk about, you know, your take on female in the military. And I told her that I would touch on it real quick. I told her I had a female, I mean, I had all male MOS. Did I think it was a good idea for females to come into our MOS? No, because there's going to be like in any co-ed situation, if you're out in the field for a long extended period of time, there is going to be sexual activity that happens, and you don't need that in an all male MOS and a combat MOS, because it could take away from certain things.
Yeah.
That's the same token. Like if you are married to someone on the job, you guys don't work the same shift or supposed to be at the same station in some areas, are definitely not the same shift, because if you hear emergency traffic come out with your loved one, you're going to think, forget about all else. And you're going to focus on that, which for right. You know, your basic male instincts or basic female instincts, like that's your priority. They're your job, because you need to make sure they're safe. But when you're in the professional capacity, you have to make sure everybody's safe, and you can't lose sight of that. I just did for first perspective of liability. I was like, well, I don't really think it'd be a good idea, but at the same time, if you don't drop qualifications, you keep all qualifications the same, and you're a female, because I've known some females that are outstanding and they're freaking tough and strong. But I've also known some men who are weak as shit and can't, you know, perform anything basic. If you keep everything the same and you have females that pass, I mean, they earned it. But at the same time, we have to think that if you have an all male MOS or all male, like infantry unit, and you have two females in there, what's going to happen? There's already been issues in the military with females being sexually assaulted and things like that. And that's a whole nother episode, but I don't think it'd be a good idea to incorporate just a few. If you're ever talking about incorporating, like it can't just be a few, because
there are problems.
Like you have like females in engineering battalions now, like and stuff like that, in companies that are male and female, and they go out in the front line and clear minefields and shit like that, and they seem to be working okay. But there's a lot more than just two. There's like a quarter of the unit are female, and there's still probably problems, and that can be handled that way. And you know, if you're on base in a FOB or something, like there's gonna be females there, and does shit happen? Yeah, and you get in trouble if you get caught. But at the same time, I'm like, I want to hear a female's perspective on that. So if we have female listeners,
yeah. So if we have female listeners that want to come on and talk about their experiences in the military, I've got a female in the Air Force veteran, and actually I'm gonna be saving her because there's another whole other episode that I want to deal with, because she's actually married to another Air Force veteran. So it's her husband's an Air Force pilot. She was in the Air Force. Now she works in the private sector. So I want to get the perspective of what it's like to be a married couple when you both work in the same, you know, branch of the service and all that kind of stuff. So I want to save her for that. Otherwise I'd ask her to come on and talk about her experiences as a female in the military. So other listeners, female in the military with experience, we want to talk to you. Cameron, Jake, I appreciate you guys coming on. Please come back. Chuck, get that schedule, because this was a good time. And I think talking about hunting and the shit that wildlife wardens get into out there. I mean, you know, you got the world's deadliest predators out there, and then you got man, which is the absolute deadliest predator. So we want to talk about some of the shit you guys get into out there in the wilderness, and how a lot of times, man, you're the fucking Lone Ranger.
Oh, yeah.
Literally. So
yeah.
So
nope, that'd be great. Yep, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Appreciate it. All right. Well, until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.